Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last week, President Obama appointed former Ohio Attorney General Richard Cordray to be the nation's new chief consumer financial watchdog. Republicans opposed the move, saying the new agency has too much power to implement job-killing regulations. What do you think? Does Wall Street need more regulation? Tell us what you think. Go to WOSU.org for the question of the day. We'll share your answers later today during All Things Considered broadcast. So, Richard Cordray, who lost his bid for re-election as Attorney General in 2010, will lead the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And now that there's a leader in place, the Bureau can employ all its enforcement powers. We'll get to those powers later on this hour. And in the next hour, Richard Cordray himself will join us for a few minutes. But first, a possible hitch about that. That appointment, along with two others to the National Labor Relations Board, occurred as so-called recess appointments, ostensibly because they were made while the Senate was in recess. But there's disagreement over what constitutes recess and whether the Senate was in that state. David Hirschman, head of the Center for Capital Markets at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, expressed his concerns in this report by NPR's Tamara Keith.
It opens grave constitutional questions about whether this recess appointment was legal. And my guess is that it will make it much harder for the agency to move forward.
Joining us now is NPR congressional reporter Tamara Keith. She's been covering the issue. Welcome to the show, Tamara.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Republicans are saying that they weren't really in recess, that the appointment was illegal. The president obviously thought it was appropriate. So who's right?
Well, that's a question that perhaps eventually will be settled by a court somewhere. Right now, the Bureau is going ahead functioning as if the president is right, which I guess makes sense given that the president is the one who made the recess appointment and put Richard Cordray there in the top job at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
So how is a conflict like this resolved? How does that work? What's the next step?
Well, it's possible that a senator or someone could file a lawsuit saying, hey, wait, this isn't right. We were not in recess. We were meeting every 3 days for 30 seconds or so, which is what had been happening all through most of this past year, actually, to avoid an official recess and to attempt to block a recess appointment. Someone could sue, though at this point I haven't heard any real grumblings of that happening. Several years ago when George W. Bush was president, Democrats sued over a recess appointment, and ultimately the courts found in the president's favor. But what we're hearing is most likely to happen is as the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau does its job, they will inevitably come up with a rule or a regulation that someone somewhere doesn't like. Then whoever that is, maybe a payday lender or who knows, a bank, some organization that would be regulated, will most likely file suit. And as part of that, they will question the very validity of the agency and the validity of its director and its ability to do these regulations with a director that was not Senate confirmed.
Oh, so this might come up again in the context of a larger
opposition
to the legislation.
Entirely. Sometime down the line, we're not sure when. This is that cloud of uncertainty that people are talking about that David Hirschman at the Chamber, for instance, spoke about.
My guest is NPR congressional reporter Tamara Keith. We're talking about the new Consumer Finance Protection Agency, also about the recess appointment that was made by the president of Richard Cordray. If you have a question or comment for Tamara, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don't forget to go to wosu.org for the question of the day. Is more regulation needed at the federal on Wall Street? So why couldn't the Bureau engage in full enforcement and spread its wings fully with the interim leader?
What the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau believed is that they were not able to take on the non-bank financial institutions. These would be the payday lenders, the money remittance organizations, any number of other smaller financial institutions. Their interpretation of the law was that the way it was written, it said until you are an independent organization, until you have your wings to fly, until you have a director, you just can't take on those things. And so they felt like their wings were clipped, and they weren't able to do everything that they wanted to do. These non-bank financial institutions have been a real black hole in terms of regulation and consumer protection. And it was a major priority of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to be able to get at some of these things. And so they felt that it was very important to be able to have a director to actually have the legal authority to take those things on. And Richard Cordray has said, you know, we've started on that already. And he's been on the job for, what, like 4 days?
Well, that would be sort of like Richard Cordray, if we know anything about his past. You know, a couple issues that the Republicans are troubled with about the agency as it stands. One is the funding stream. Why do they care about whether the funding stream comes through the executive branch or through Congress?
Well, I think that what they will say is this agency is, in the name of independence, they felt that it just went too far, that Congress and Democrats in Congress who were in control when the agency was created as part of the financial industry regulation reforms, they feel they went too far in trying to be independent. And so basically Congress has no control over the purse strings of this agency. Republicans in Congress feel that they would love for Congress to have control over the purse strings of this agency, because they feel if Congress had some control, then the agency couldn't go rogue, basically.
And another issue was fireability. Well, that's my word, fireability. I'm sure it doesn't exist in any language. But I didn't know this was a problem. They said that the president should be able to fire who's ever in charge.
There are all kinds of issues that have been raised, including wanting to have a commission or a board instead of having a single director.
Mm-hmm.
And I, the fireability thing is actually new on me, but the concern is basically that this director could be too powerful. This director would be unaccountable, they say. And as an unaccountable director that has a set term length, a fixed term, and who is independent, it doesn't have a board to answer to, that person could do something that is bad for financial institutions or ultimately bad for consumers, because it would make products go away potentially. And the concern is simply that there weren't enough checks on this person. And that's one of the things that Republicans had been arguing and why they had blocked the Cordray nomination had nothing to do with Mr. Cordray himself and everything to do with their concerns about the agency simply having too much power and too much independence.
Now, it's a new agency, and when the law was enacted, where were the Republicans then?
Well, they were in the minority.
Right, in both houses.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And you know, the argument that consumer advocates and people who are now supporting this recess appointment, the argument they make, and, you know, it's a decent argument here, is this is an agency that was created by Congress. Signed by the president. It went through the process, and it's the law of the land. And the argument is that Republicans in the Senate who've been blocking this nomination were trying to rewrite the law or hold the law hostage through the nomination process.
And it had nothing to do with Richard Cordray himself.
Absolutely nothing. People on all sides of the aisle will say that Richard Cordray is a perfectly qualified person who, he certainly a previous name that had been out there and a previous person who had actually led the agency on an interim basis was Elizabeth Warren. Mm-hmm. She is she's now running for Senate in Massachusetts. People on the left love her. People on the right are very much afraid of her. Financial institutions were very much afraid of her. Richard Cordray didn't create that kind of fear and animosity and also fervent support on the other side. He was seen as a reasonable choice, as someone who would do the job well. The objection was never to him. It was to the agency itself.
John in Youngstown, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, John.
I got a question. I thought the Senate, they had a pro forma session. And if they did, how can you call this a recess appointment? Because they were in session. It seems like the media is just lying to everybody, saying they weren't in session. And that's why it was a recess appointment. In all reality, they were in session, so it can't be a recess and appointment.
Thanks, John. You know, when I was reading that the Constitution, that there's a lot of ambiguity around what a recess appointment or a recess is.
Indeed. You might want to put recess in quotes, in okay. air quotes, because a lot of people, that the Senate was meeting in pro forma sessions just the day before. They had held a session that lasted a whopping total of 40 seconds. It didn't involve a prayer or a pledge of allegiance. It basically was like gavel in, hello, we're here, we're doing our pro forma thing, and then they gaveled out. And they've been doing that for months and months and months whenever they're out of town. Basically, the president said, I don't buy it. One could say convenient in his view, just deciding, oh, well, this thing you're doing isn't for real. But the reality is pro forma sessions have not been tested. There is nothing in the Constitution about a pro forma session blocking a recess appointment. This is something that is to be worked out ultimately by the courts. But at this point, there is no legal precedent for this one way or another.
How many people have to be present for a pro forma?
My impression is there is one person.
Okay, that gavels in and gavels out.
Gavels in, gavels out. Several staffers there, but just one congressman or one senator just has to be there to say hello, goodbye. And literally 40 seconds.
David and Bexley are on the air. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks, Ann. On a related matter, I had heard on the media that the Democrats had utilized this mechanism when there was a Republican president. But what is the Senate vote that is required to approve a recess?
Yeah, the Democrats did employ this when George W. Bush was president near the end of his term, and President Bush did not test it, as President Obama has now done. In order to adjourn, there has to be an adjournment resolution, and my understanding is that both the House and the Senate have to sign off on it. So the House has to give the Senate permission to recess. The Republican-controlled House has not given the Senate permission to recess since at least May.
Thank you, David, for that call. If the Senate wanted the language of the law that created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau changed, why didn't they pursue that instead of delaying a vote? Has there been legislation introduced to change it?
I believe in the House there has been legislation introduced, but that legislation wouldn't have a shot in the Senate. I mean, it wouldn't even come up in the Senate because the Senate is controlled by Democrats and Harry Reid, and they feel as though this is a settled matter. So the legislative process was not going to work in Republicans' favor on this. And so they felt that their best shot was through the nomination process, through holding up the nomination. There was a letter signed by 44 Republicans in the Senate saying, we will not allow this thing to happen. We will filibuster any nominee. And it was an attempt to force negotiations. The Obama administration did not take them up on that offer.
Now, Cordray's appointment wasn't alone. The president also appointed two people to the National Labor Relations Board. Were they having the same kind of troubles?
I think it may have even been three people.
Oh, okay.
The reality is that there have been just a number, like not dozens, possibly hundreds of nominations to courts and executive branch agencies and various nominations that have been held up. There have been a number of holds placed on them, just a number of delays, filibusters. We've had ambassadorships that have been blocked for filibuster. The Obama administration has had a very tough time getting its nominees approved.
Tougher than usual. I mean, this has been going on for years now. These delays like this, but his is even worse.
Yeah, I mean the confirmation wars are nothing new.
Right.
It has been particularly tough for the Obama administration. The Senate is long known as a place where bills go to die, it's also become a place where filibusters, you don't even call it a filibuster anymore. Basically, for anything at all to happen in the Senate, you need 60 votes to overcome a filibuster because everything is getting filibustered. It's this new gridlocky way of functioning that is remarkable.
Well, coming up to join Tamara Keith, we're going to meet a co-founder of an organization called No Labels, which wants to get at this issue of, what did you call it? Gridlocky. Okay.
Yes, I'm making up words, too.
Okay. We'll be right back with Tamara Keith and also... Tom Davis of No Labels. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Out of Iraq and forced to cut costs, Defense Secretary Leon Panetta says the U.S. needs a smaller, leaner fighting force. But
we must maintain the world's finest military.
Critics warn it can't have both. I'm Jennifer Ludden. Pentagon cuts and the future of the U.S. military. Plus, the opinion page. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. And you can join our station for live special coverage of the New Hampshire primary. It's Tuesday night at 9. Join NPR's Melissa Block and a panel of political reporters for candidate speeches, interviews, and expert analysis. It's special coverage of the New Hampshire primary from NPR News tomorrow night at 9 on 89.7 NPR News. 36 degrees with partly sunny skies. Expect sunshine today and a high of 45. Clear skies tonight and a low of 31. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Today on All Sides, we're talking about President Obama's appointment of Richard Cordray as director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, a new federal agency. That appointment, along with two others to the Labor Relations Board, occurred as so-called recess appointments, ostensibly because they were made while the Senate was in recess. Still with us is NPR congressional reporter Tamara Keith, who's covering the story. And once again, thanks for joining us, Tamara.
Very, very much glad to be on WOSU again.
As a, that's right, you're an alum.
And indeed, an alum from a long time.
Well, welcome back and thanks again.
Thank you.
Joining us now is Thomas Davis. He's the co-founder of No Labels, a nonpartisan political reform group. Tom is a former congressman representing the 11th Congressional District of Virginia and the former chair of the National Republican Congressional Committee. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
No Labels has proposed a reform that your group says would solve the current recess appointment controversy. What would it do?
Well, basically, what we advocate is that everybody gets an up or down vote. You still need 60 votes after a certain period of time, 90 days. Right now, most of these nominations don't ever see the light of day. Some of them never see hearings. Vote them up or down. You don't have to like them, but so much of this is just done under the cloak of nothing happening.
Well, you were
it's difficult. Go ahead.
Well, you were in Congress. I mean, would you have wanted that kind of power and that kind of ability to manipulate the system taken away from you when you were in Congress?
Listen, I think right now the system is completely broken. I mean, you just have to take a look at the output from Washington. All this does is it allows people to vote up or down on these issues. Right now, you don't even get votes. You get these secret holds. Hearings don't take place. It makes it difficult for administrations, whether they're Republican or Democrat, to put people in place. And so you're trying to govern, and you've got a third of your people can't even get through the system.
Tamara Keith, you were saying there's maybe hundreds waiting for confirmation, and the time frame they're talking about with No Labels includes committee and floor action, and if a nominee's name is not confirmed or rejected within 90 days, the nominee would be confirmed by default. I mean, wouldn't they almost be working around the clock at this point?
Well, you can't fix everything overnight. There would be a lot to work through, but the reality is there are a lot of vacancies right now that could certainly benefit from having someone in the job. One thing I will say about Richard Cordray, if he had gotten an up or down vote, he probably would have been, he would have gotten the job through the regular process. When they did the cloture vote, which is the vote to stop the filibuster, essentially, he received 53 I votes, which would have been enough to secure the nomination, but certainly not enough to overcome the 60-vote threshold to stop debate.
Tom, well, Cordray is a more controversial appointment, but let me just say there are a lot of people sitting there waiting that nobody has any gripe with them. They're just sitting there because of inertia, because somebody puts a hold on them because they're angry about something else. That's where the system really breaks down.
Tom Davis, when you were in Congress, when was that, and what were things like back then?
They were getting worse. I came in election of 94,
okay,
and I left, as I said, undefeated and unindicted in 2006. I just my last re-election in 2008. So when Obama came in, I went out and back into the private sector where I've come from.
So tell us, what is the idea behind No Labels? It isn't just about a 90-day up or down vote. It's about more than that.
No, it's about, you know, the state of the union, having people sit together. The real problem is that the big issues the country faces, let's talk about energy policy, we can talk about immigration reform, we can talk about the budget deficit. These are huge, huge problems. Is that they just keep getting kicked down the road. There is no real attempt to address an answer, a solution to these. Both parties have talking points, but they just kick the can down the road because neither party gets their way. So that's the real tragedy, is trying to get them together in compromise. When I was in the House, for example, we had a Republican Congress, a Democratic president, Bill Clinton,
mm-hmm.
but we got together and reformed welfare. We actually had 4 years of balanced budgets after the Balanced Budget Act. A lot of compromises, but we at least addressed the issues. These issues are just getting kicked down the road now, and that's the real problem. Not who's right and who's wrong. It's just, you know, if I can't get my way, we don't do anything.
We've heard, and, you know, whether it's at the state level in Ohio or at the federal level, lots of government reform proposals before. Do you really think there's a chance for a major reform at this time? I mean, isn't the very nature of what you're trying to reform going to play against whatever you're trying to achieve?
Well, I think eventually you get it, because you can't continue to have a system that's borrowing over 40 cents for every dollar you spend. That is, I think, whether you're an economist or a financial wizard, that is clearly unsustainable. And sooner or later, if Congress doesn't act, the markets will step in and do their own correction, and you end up with a TARP type of situation where congressional and political leadership fail, and the markets step in, and you get these severe corrections, which is just then Congress has to act. At that point, you have fewer options. So I think it happens eventually. You know, really good leadership can do it. The problem, here's what's evolved over the last 12 years, is today, because of the media models, you have the MSNBC model, the Fox model, where you cater ideologically in the 24/7 news cycle, the growth of the Internet. The media now become very polarized, and people tune into what they want to hear to get their fix. Campaign finance is worse than it's ever been, because interest groups spend more money independently now than the parties and candidates together. Interest groups tend to be more ideologically on the fringes. Parties are a centering force. Districts are drawn now, in the House in particular, to be blue or red. The bottom line is most members' race is their primary race, not their general election mm-hmm. race. And if you're in a primary, you don't get rewarded for compromise. So the political rewards and incentives right now are not to compromise. The end result is we've had three straight nationalized elections. Our elections have become more parliamentary in their nature, but we still have a balance of powers government, and it's not a very comfortable fit.
Tamara Keith, what are you hearing on the Hill? Are there defenders of the status quo who say that this process of filibustering is necessary and important and valuable?
Well, it's the Senate's prerogative. It's the thing that makes the Senate special. But I you know, have spoken to people on both sides of the aisle who are entirely frustrated with the way things are going. Nobody enjoys gridlock, not to this extent. I think that in some ways they've gotten to a point where they, you know, things just escalate, and they don't quite know how to get out of it. Like, you can't just wake up one day and make everything work.
You know, getting back to the gaveling in and gaveling out, who's doing that? Democrats control the Senate. Well, it's the majority. I mean, control's another ambiguous term these days. But
well, the Democrats are gaveling. Yeah, the Democrats.
So the Democrats are doing this to their own.
Right. They're not technically in recess. They're still meeting from day to day. This corduroy appointment and the NLRB appointments will be tested in court in terms of what is actually in recess, and that will go to court. This breaks new ground. I think it's probably a good political move for the administration. Whether they win on it or not, I think will be up to courts, and that'll take a while to get resolved. But the Democrats, the Republicans wouldn't let Congress adjourn over this time period. And by the way, the Democrats, the same for Bush. So it's a tit for a tat.
Oh, sure, yeah. It cuts both ways. Is this playing into the president's hand to stop this popular, non-controversial financial consumer watchdog from taking office, Tamara Keith? Is this not good for the Republicans to be in this kind of spat, or what?
Well, I think that the Republicans feel that this is a very important matter, that you know, this is a new agency, and they want to get it off to the right start, if you will, and they were very concerned about it having sort of unfettered powers. Obviously, the president has been having a good month or two. He has gotten much more populist in his approach, both with this recess appointment, which certainly pleased his supporters on the left, and allows him to continue his narrative of defending the middle class and fighting for the middle class. He also, arguably, and many people would agree, won the fight, at least for now, the initial battle over the payroll tax holiday and unemployment benefits extension. He somehow, through various maneuvers, found a way to make Republicans look bad on a tax issue, which is really hard to do because Republicans almost always win arguments over taxes. So the president has been on a pretty strong streak, largely by moving in this more populist direction.
Let me just say I would agree with that. As somebody who chaired the Republican campaign committee two cycles, the president's got a little traction right now. But at the end of the day, what's really going to matter is, where is unemployment? You know, where is the Iraqi situation? Where are a lot of these other variables going to be next fall? And that's why this payroll tax is so important to the administration. They really believe that if you were to stop this thing in February, that you'd stop some economic growth. And so they fought hard for it, and I think they won the preliminary battle. Well, we'll see where the economy is in the fall, but I think that's where the presidential race could end up. These little victories are not meaningless, but at the end of the day, it's does the public feel that the country's moving in the right direction or not?
Tom Davis, co-founder of No Labels, when you're talking about these kinds of changes, you know, the 90-day up or down vote, for example, would that be a rules change that could change from?
Yeah, it has to be a rules change. It's difficult to enact. We also have the Congress hasn't passed the appropriations bills on time in years, so these agencies sit there and they wait to get their appropriation, and they can't do contracts or anything else because they don't know how much money they're going to have to spend for the whole year. So they kind of hold back on things. It really stifles your managers. We propose that if Congress doesn't get the budget passed on time, members don't get paid. That would be a good incentive. That's the only job they have to do every year, is to pass the 12 appropriation bills. That's the only thing they're mandated to do in the law, and they're late doing that every year. Last year it was May for an October 1 start of the fiscal year. It's terrible.
Marge in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Marge.
Well, thank you so much. Excellent, information and fine people to have on. My own opinion on the appointment of Cordray is not relative to this. I just direct individuals and citizens, as they update their glass prescriptions, anything, update the knowledge of our Constitution, the national, the state, and the local. Be aware whether they can get to the library by a friend. They don't have a PC or anything. A librarian will help them to pinpoint what they're questioning, executive and legislative duties. Also, I'm not calling Democrats or Republicans or anything. I'm not blaming anything. Human beings have their agendas, and rightly so. But we can make decisions when we actually go on facts. facts, not our pundits and our one station or another, but actual facts on things. A librarian, not a true librarian, a journalist, not a true journalist, the definition speaks for itself. Just be aware. A great country, a great state, a great city.
Okay.
Just be aware. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, March.
Thank you.
614-292-8513. If you want to give us a call, you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have just a few minutes left with Tom Davis, co-founder of No Labels, and also NPR congressional reporter Tamara Keith. So get the call in quick if you're interested. So, Tamara, you're saying that at this point it could fizzle out or it'll be challenged down the road when other issues regarding the agency are channeled. Challenged.
So the folks I've spoken to truly believe that at some point this recess, in air quotes, nomination, or this will be challenged through some sort of a challenge of a rule that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau will come out with at some point. What's not clear is how long it might take for any sort of a challenge to come forward or for that challenge to work its way through the courts. It could well be that, the election will have happened by then or a different director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau will be in place or possibly Cordray will be confirmed through the regular process by the time any of this makes it through the court.
Okay. Troy in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Troy.
Thank you. I had a comment, and I wanted to ask Ms. Keith a question. My question is, you had made a comment that it was unusual for the amount of resistance that this current administration was getting and getting its appointments in. I want to know if you can go a little bit further on that. I mean, how serious is this problem that Obama is having that's different from, say, Bush? Because I know the Democrats did it when Bush was in office, and, of course, when Clinton was in office, there was a lot of issues there, too. But how unusual is this for this particular president?
Well, and I will say I think it might be a good question for Tom, who actually was in office during a couple of other administrations.
Tom Davis?
It's the problem. You know, the biggest problem is just getting good people to even put their names forward to go into government. Because this stuff takes so long, it's an interruption from your careers. You have to get rid of all of your stock portfolios and everything else, and then you just sit up there and don't get confirmed. So it hurts on recruiting people, and it just hurts in running government, and I think it's serious.
And you end up with people, very good people, very highly qualified people, who are giving up a lot to even consider a nomination, and then you end up with them twisting in the wind for months or more than a year. And some people ultimately get so frustrated that they pull out.
Yeah, and it's not about the person. Most of these folks have nothing to do with even the position. You can have a member that is angry over something else, over the closing of a base or something in their district, and they'll put a hold on a series of nominees to show it.
Tom Davis, co-founder of No Labels. Thanks for joining us today, Tom.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
And also Tamara Keith, NPR congressional reporter. Tamara, welcome back, and thanks for being with us.
It was lovely. Thank you.
Take care. Coming up, we're going to hear more about the agency itself. What does it do? How might you see some changes in your everyday financial dealings? Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, the story of Rin Tin Tin, a dog found in the wreckage of a kennel during World War I, who would become one of film, radio, and television's biggest stars. We'll talk with author Susan Orlean about her new book, Rin Tin Tin, The Life and the Legend. It's her first original book since her bestseller, The Orchid Thief. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And stay with us in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. At the beginning of the hour, Richard Cordray, with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, will be joining the show for a few minutes. And then in the hour as well, the power of humor in coping with life's difficulties with performer, author, and humorist Pat Wynn Brown. Stay with us for hour two of All Sides from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News. And you can help shorten the upcoming 89.7 NPR News winter membership drive. Become a sustaining member. For every 100 sustaining members we receive, we will eliminate one day from our membership drive. Visit WOSU.org and make your sustaining gift right now. Mostly sunny skies today, a high of 45 degrees. Clear skies for tonight and a low of 31. Expect some sunshine for Tuesday and a high of 48 degrees. Clear skies Tuesday night, a low of 35. And then looking ahead to Wednesday, rain is likely, a high of 51. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Today on All Sides, we're talking about President Obama's recess appointment of Richard Cordray as director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. It's a new federal agency. Coming up, we're going to speak with Richard Cordray at the beginning of the next hour, so stay with us for that. The appointment occurred last week. Republicans opposed the move, saying the new agency has too much power to implement job-killing regulations. So do you think Wall Street needs more regulation? Tell us what you think. Go to WOSU.org for the question of the day. We'll share your answers later today during the All Things Considered broadcast. Right now, we're going to find out more about the powers of the new Consumer Bureau and what difference a director will make. Joining us now from Washington, D.C., Pamela Banks. She's the Senior Policy Counsel for Consumers Union. Consumers Union is the nonprofit policy and advocacy organization affiliated with Consumer Reports magazine. Welcome to the show, Pamela.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act was enacted by a Democratic Congress and signed by President Obama in July 2010. The act brought the most significant changes to financial regulation in the United States since the regulatory reform that followed the Great Depression. So what were these big changes?
Well, perhaps though number one or the biggest change is that it created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which means that for the first time, consumers have one agency whose sole responsibility is to protect them or to stop unfair, deceptive, and abusive practices in the financial services market.
In a Consumers Union press release, you were quoted as saying that Congress created the CFPB to be a watchdog for consumers, and it has to have a director to put its full powers to work. Why did it have to have a director? Because that was the administration's point as well, that you needed this appointment to start, you know, to put it into full gear. But why is that? Why couldn't just an interim have done the same job?
Well, that's the way the law was written. And what it really means is that currently, or before Richard Cordray was named to head the CFPB, the CFPB could enforce the current consumer protection laws that were already on the books, that were already the responsibility of the other financial regulators, but who unfortunately weren't doing the job, and that's why they created the CFPB. What they needed authority to do is to go after entities that up until this point had not been regulated. For example, payday loans, student debt, those who provide student loans, credit reporting agencies, maybe even mortgage servicing to a large extent. So they're going after this new non-bank, if you will, entity that up until this point have not been regulated.
Now, payday loans, they're somewhat regulated in Ohio. They're limited in some ways, in amounts and in interest rates that they can charge and that sort of thing. What's different about what might happen at the federal level? How would the payday loan industry be affected?
Certainly, they can look at it from a federal level. Ohio may be more progressive with respect to regulating their payday lenders. But what we find is if they go to a state where there's good regulation, the payday lenders just move to another state and they just keep moving around. However, if the CFPB in its wisdom determines that it needs to be regulated on a national level, then it will be an even playing field across the nation. So it wouldn't be spotty. So you would have good regulation in Ohio, you would have it in Maine, because it would all be set by the federal government.
And what is the problem with the student loan industry? It's the private student loan industry, of course.
Right. Under the Dodd-Frank bill, the CFPB is required to do a study of student loans, and that study will be due next July. And the whole purpose of that is to determine to what extent this entity needs to be regulated. Right now, private student loans aren't regulated, and they're rifled with high fees, onerous terms that actually keep students in a cycle of debt that they can't pay off. It's like a lifetime to pay off.
And are these student loans, I guess the study's going to determine where they're coming from, but they were able to go forward with a study, that sort of thing.
Oh, absolutely. The study is due in July. I think they've already started working on the study, but certainly the study will be used to inform whether or not there is a need to regulate that area, and perhaps there isn't, or perhaps certain aspects of that area need to be regulated, but that's what they'll find out in their study.
Congressional Republicans have wanted a couple things. One, the funding stream to go through Congress, and another big thing was to have a board or a panel instead of one person at the helm of this new agency. Go to the funding for a second. What difference does that make?
Well, what is being proposed? Well, let's start with currently. Currently, the funding comes through the Federal Reserve, which gets its money from the industry. So in other words, the banks that are being regulated pay their money to the Federal Reserve, and a piece of that money goes to the CFPB for its budget. So they don't have to go to Congress and get their appropriation. The industry is paying for it. Now, what they want to change is make the CFPB subject to the appropriations process, which in tail would actually make it political, because depending on who's in Congress, whether or not they believe in the CFPB or not, they can have impact on the funding. And of course, without the funding, the CFPB is not as robust and can't do its job. So that's one issue. The other issue is they want to replace the director position with the commission. The problem with the commission, unfortunately, is sometimes you get bogged down in doing the responsibilities or enforcing the law or implementing the law. So we thought a director is a better, more efficient way to get the job done. And certainly, you know, even though there's a director in place, his power isn't unbridled. There are all sorts of checks and balances that are written in the law that will make certain that whatever he does is right for the CFPB, right for consumers, and right for the country.
My guest is Pamela Banks, Senior Policy Counsel for Consumers Union. If you have a question or comment for Pamela Banks, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don't delay. We've got a few minutes left. Today we're talking about President Obama's recess appointment of Richard Cordray as director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. It's a new federal agency, and that's what we're talking about specifically with Pamela right now. Another issue is credit card protections.
Sure.
And enforcement of those credit card protections. That enforcement wasn't in place before now?
Well, it will be 3 years ago in May that the Credit Card Act was passed by Congress and signed by the President. And the Credit Card Act was designed to protect consumers from abusive credit card practices, such as changing the date when your payment is due to make it such that your payment is late and then you get a penalty fee, and other things. That's the one that comes to my mind most often, because I think that's so grossly unfair to consumers. What the CFPB can do is two things. One, they can certainly take a look at the CARD Act and see if there are any improvements that are needed to further protect consumers from credit card abuses. And then, two, they can make certain that the terms and conditions of a credit card offering is simplified and written in plain English so that consumers, when they shop for a credit card, can compare apples to apples and know exactly what they're signing up for, understand the fees, understand the interest rates.
We had a caller earlier on who said that people need to educate themselves. They need to know what they're talking about, know what they're voting on, and know what they're doing when it comes to consumer issues. To what extent
Absolutely.
Do you think that people, you know, the old you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink is going to come into play here?
Well, certainly you can present the information and not everybody is going to take advantage of the information, but you have to make it available. And with time, I think consumers will become more vigilant. I think after we've experienced the financial crisis a few years ago, certainly consumers are more vigilant with respect to their credit card offerings, their mortgages. And I think with more time, and certainly with the CFPB, they're mandating the disclosures in a form and in a manner that consumers can understand. I think that will change. I think the information will be out there and more people will use it.
The CFPB, the new agency, is supposed to monitor financial markets for new risks to consumers. What is that about? What are we looking at there?
Well, what it does is certainly with respect to financial products and services, they will have their finger on the pulse as to what's happening with the industry. For example, with mortgages, there are a lot of toxic mortgages out there. And certainly you would say, well, weren't there other regulators who were vigilant or watching? But they really weren't. But now with the CFPB there, they will keep a close eye on what's happening in the financial markets and make certain that whatever is out there, consumers get the information they need to make sound decisions and, if appropriate, regulation.
In your opinion, since 2008, I guess what we think of as the meltdown period, has the industry self-corrected at all?
We see some self-correction, but not as much as is certainly needed. For example, we are seeing that some fees are going away with respect to banking accounts, but unfortunately, some of those fees may go away, but then new ones crop up. So it's not where it should be. We see some changes. Hopefully the CFPB will help get them to where we need to be. And we're not talking about stifling or crippling any bank or any financial servicer provider's ability to offer a product to a consumer. We're just saying that in order to offer that product, it should be safe for consumers to buy or to use the services. And that's what the CFPB will be there to do. CFPB, quite frankly, will impact just about every aspect of a consumer's financial services or financial products.
Is there anything that the average American, you know, investor, retiree, just an average person who's earning an average paycheck kind of a thing is going to notice anything overtly about the change?
Well, one thing that I'm very pleased to hear is that if a consumer has a consumer complaint with respect to their credit cards, I think they're doing credit cards first, but then they're going to go to mortgages and other financial products and services. But certainly right now, if you are a consumer that's experiencing a problem with your credit card or your credit card issuer, you can contact the CFPB today, and they will help resolve that problem. That's a huge benefit for consumers, many of whom are overwhelmed about the process of how to fix something on their credit card. Well, today, they're not alone. They can contact the CFPB. They will take their complaint and help resolve the complaint.
My guest, once again, Pamela Banks, Senior Policy Counsel for Consumers Union. If you have a quick question for her about the new Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Isn't there, the new agency combined a lot of other agencies from really across the gamut.
Yes.
How did that work? Functionally, is it working or are there still problems?
Well, they they've certainly had some lead time. The way the legislation was written is that there were currently, at that time, there were seven different agencies responsible for consumer protection. To name a few, you had the OCC, you had the FDIC, you had the Federal Reserve, OTS. Well, when the Dodd-Frank law was passed, the CFPB was given 1 year to inherit all those consumer protection laws and bring them under one roof. So actually, over the last year, they've been meeting with these different agencies, making certain the transition is smoothly. They've also hired some of the people or personnel from these agencies. So for the last year, they have been setting up things so that they are ready and willing, certainly, to take on this challenge of having all consumer protection laws in one place. So given that, and given also the fact that they have been hiring up professionals both from the consumer world and from the banking world, they're pretty well on their way to meeting a lot of the challenges that were facing consumers in the past and certainly in implementing Dodd-Frank. So the transition has actually been rather smooth because it's taken place over the last year.
NPR's congressional reporter Tamara Keith in the last segment made the point that opposition to this law, opposition to this agency is not over, that as soon as they start to enforce some of these aspects of the law, there's going to be a lot of pushback. What are your expectations?
Well, certainly that's regrettable, and it, you know, it's sort of downhearted because the very issues that are being debated today or over the structure of the CFPB, that was resolved when Dodd-Frank was passed. That was the time to make changes and to implement the law the way members of Congress saw fit. And they saw fit to establish an independent CFPB with the authority to regulate for unfair and unsafe financial products and services. The mere fact that we're now going back to that, and if you will, in law they would say we are relitigating, but in this case we're re-legislating something that has already been settled upon and signed by the president is rather disheartening, and certainly it delays the process. So we can only hope that going forward that the wisdom of the CFPB and the vote for the consumer prevails, and that a lot of the initiatives that the CFPB is working on will go forth without a lot of challenges.
I think, Pamela, the last time you were with us was just right after the law was passed, and I want to thank you for rejoining us again.
My pleasure.
Pamela Banks, Senior Policy Counsel for Consumers Union. Thanks for listening. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.